Welcome to Waiting For You, the podcast where we talk infertility, hope, loss and courage. I'm Janine, mum of one, a newborn and family photographer and lover of dark chocolate. Here we will share stories of families who have faced a different or difficult journey through conception, pregnancy or postpartum. I want to honour these stories and have them be heard, and I want to bring it all, the tears, the hope, the despair and the joy. Hey, welcome back to Waiting For You. In this episode, I chat with Anna, who shares her experience of secondary infertility. When trying to conceive her second child, Anna experienced many, many things. Miscarriages, severe morning sickness, IVF treatment, and anxiety. She went through a lot. Anna is now holding her precious baby girl, Andy, in her arms. Here's Anna's story. Hey, Anna. So nice to have you on the podcast today.
G'day, thanks for having me on.
Oh, wonderful. It's so nice to have you here. Do you want to start, Anna, by telling us a little bit about you and your family?
Yeah, sure. So got myself, my husband, Ben, and then we've got our five-year-old son, Beck, and got wee Andy, who's coming up 8 weeks.
Oh, so cute.
So yeah, pretty fresh.
Yeah, and how's it going?
Yeah, it's going really well. Yeah, she's very chill and she a bit of trouble with the feeding at the beginning, but we're on a roll now, so that's good.
Oh, I'm glad. And what do you, I mean, obviously you're in a season of brand new baby in your life, but generally what do you love doing as a family?
Yeah, so we live in West Harbour in Auckland and get out as much as we can for walks and bike rides and things like that, hanging out with our friends that have mostly got kids, young kids as well. And we also head down to the Coromandel quite a lot because my parents live down there. So,
oh, yes, yeah. I have seen that. It cooks hot water beach.
Hey.
I've seen photos of you on Instagram. Yeah, down there.
Trying to escape there as much as we can.
Yeah, Hahei is one of my favourite beaches. So beautiful. Okay, so today you're going to share your journey to have your children, and it is a fertility journey. So do you want to share with us about how you knew you were going to face fertility treatment? I'm not sure if that starts with Beck or with Andy.
It would definitely be Andy. So I guess I'm sort of that secondary infertility bracket, which is sort of a different place to be because that comes with its own sort of feelings of, you know, are you grateful for what you've got and all those sort of things. But yeah, so I'll start, I guess, in our journey to becoming parents. So yeah, we got married in March of 2016 and we both decided we just really wanted to crack on and start a family, really. One of the first in our friend group, I suppose, to do so, but we ended up getting pregnant really easily. So, yeah, so that was in July of 2016 that I got pregnant. I'd just started a new job. And really the only thing that was, I guess, less than textbook was the severity of the morning sickness that I had, I'll go into a little bit more about that side of things later. But I kind of had to tell work early and all that sort of stuff and take time off and things like that. But by about 16 weeks, that had all cleared up. And we had Beck, and he was born in April 2017. And all was well. And he was a big, bonny baby. And so that was really great. And, you know, looking back, like, you know, so grateful that all went straight forward, knowing now what I know.
Exactly.
So we were renting at the time and we're looking to buy a house and things like that. And so we wanted to hold off till we had a few things ticked off before we tried for a second baby.
Okay.
And he was about just over two when we wanted to try again, and we'd just managed to buy a house, so it was all going to plan. I found out I was pregnant again, once again, quite easily, and I was thinking, I suppose there's an element of being a bit cocky or a bit naive and that, you know, like, oh, I suppose that's, you know, must be because we go to the gym and we keep fit and all that. I know that, you know, really it can affect anybody. But once again, I got hit pretty bad with the sickness at about the 6 week mark. Mm-hmm. I was taking that time, this time I took ondansetron, which is an anti-anemic drug, just to help a bit. Had a few miserable side effects, but sort of stopped the vomiting a fair bit. And we went to the 8 week scan and we saw a nice healthy heartbeat. And so, yeah, there weren't really anything to really think anything would go wrong. And looking back, sort of like my morning sickness had sort of started fading around the 10 week mark. But once again, I was sort of thinking, well, every pregnancy is different and all of that.
And also you're on medication, right? So that
there wasn't really too many alarm bells going off. But like I can remember we had some friends over just before I was due for my 12-week scan. I think I was going in that next week. Mm-hmm. And so we were very close to that sort of 12-week mark. And I remember being able to eat what I'd put out in front of everybody and feeling quite well, which was not the case with Beck at all.
Right,
so I was sort of in the back of my mind, sort of, this is a little bit odd, but hey, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe it's a girl instead or I don't know.
So
we just carried on. And then basically the heavy bleeding started a few days out from that scan. So I just kind of knew that it was not going to be good. And so this was sort of the middle of the night and we in the morning headed to the emergency department. And I can remember that morning there was like a gridlock on the whole of the Harbour Bridge. So the whole of Auckland was in gridlock. So we had to get up and make our way slowly to the hospital. The first thing they do is like run your bloods. And the doctor comes in and tells me that, you know, my hormone levels were not where they should be for a 12-week fetus. And, you know, they'll do an ultrasound as soon as they can, but, you know, they hand you all the pamphlets and, yeah.
Right.
So I just remember, like, after the miscarriage was sort of confirmed on ultrasound, like, having to wait around for some other tests and, yeah, it was really shocking. And I just remember, like, I was just crying so much. Like, I can remember thinking, I don't even remember the last time I've ever cried this much. Like, it's got to have been 10 years, you know, like I just was sobbing inconsolably and just all of this sort of guttural kind of emotion, I guess. And it was, it was bad. And so, but you know, like obviously we had no reason to worry about our fertility at that point, you know. So we had to go in and talk to the doctor, I think it was the next day, about options. And they sort of recommended the surgical option. Because
is that the DNC?
Just for a few reasons on ultrasound. So I was fine with that. But what ended up being a bit horrible about it was that the booking time they could get me was, I think, maybe 2 days later or maybe something like that. Mm-hmm. So I had to kind of go home and carry on. And what was really unfortunate was that the booking time for the day of the surgery was in the afternoon. And if it had been the morning, we would have avoided this. But I basically, like, the pain started to go from what was sort of like bad period pain to like a 10 out of 10 just in that afternoon of my surgery day.
Right. So your body was doing its own miscarriage.
Correct. Yeah. So I think, you know, so my husband had taken Beck out that morning to his swimming lesson or whatever he was. Yeah. And I remember texting him saying, you need to come home right now because, we've got to go to the hospital right now. Like, I'm keeling over in pain. Yeah. And I can just remember the agony that I was in getting to hospital. So I came in and I think I was like third on the list for the surgery, but they ended up bumping me forward because of just how much pain I was in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was horrible, being pumped with morphine. It's not touching the sides. Mm. And I can remember the anaesthetist who was about to put me under. I just remember crying, thinking, thank God, they're going to just put me to sleep, because obviously I woke up not in pain anymore, which was, yeah. So
I was just going to ask, sorry to interrupt you. I was going to ask, and you might have been about to say this, but like, so you had the trauma of losing your baby and then that kind of physical trauma that was unexpected. How were you after those events?
Yeah, just really sad, like not worried that anything was wrong and we would never have another baby or anything, just sad, like just remember feeling really sad and like a bit of a black cloud, but also sort of philosophical about it, like how common it is and, you know, like I wasn't absolutely down in the gutter for ages. Yeah, we had also one thing was that, which apparently is not routine, but they actually send the tissue off to two places, histology and cytogenetics. Okay. So histology is standard, just to tell you whether you've got anything like a molar pregnancy or something, because they need to know. Yeah. So that came back fine. But then the cytogenetics was also done. So that's where they actually test the fetus to see if there was some sort of chromosomal reason for the miscarriage.
Okay. Yeah.
And it came back that there was. So that was actually really good in a way to know that it was, So, yeah.
Gave you some answers.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, that's right. So,
yeah.
So we were sort of told, like, there's no need to, like, have a, you know, you can try again when you feel emotionally ready and all of that.
Okay. Yeah.
So I think I waited for one period and then we began trying again. And yeah, I think it was about 6 months of trying again. And then I decided to go off to the GP to have some basic fertility workup done.
Because before you'd always got pregnant straight away, right?
Yeah, I think
pretty quickly.
I was feeling correct. Yeah, that's right. And so I just wanted to kind of just get some more information. So I had what's called a day 3 and a day 21 blood done.
Okay.
And Ben had some stuff done and his was fine. My day 3 bloods, which measures your FSH hormone. Mm-hmm. Came back as elevated. So I don't, basically what that means is your body's, like your pituitary gland, which sends messages to your ovaries, is working super hard to release an egg.
I see.
So when the levels are above a certain amount, it means that your body's kind of like really working hard to ovulate, I guess.
To do,
So that was like one thing that was like, oh, okay. Then where are we now? We're sort of like April of 2020. So like just like around COVID time.
Yeah, when they locked down.
Yeah. So my doctor had sort of said maybe it would be really prudent to go and have a chat with fertility associates, you know?
Yeah.
So we did that once lockdown had ended, and they ran another key test, which is AMH, which is anti-Müllerian hormone. And I think it's around $100 for this blood test that you can do. And it's like the best tool they've got to kind of look at ovarian reserve and egg count and things like that.
Yeah.
It's not a perfect science, but it's kind of indicative of maybe how close you are to menopause and things like that.
Yeah.
Once again, mine came back pretty low, my AMH level for my age. Yeah. So I had high FSH and a low AMH, which normally go hand in hand. So our doctor sort of said, you know, it's not alarmingly bad, but it would be good to get, you know, it's uterine in the right place sort of thing. So the first step of treatment, stage one, is like ovulation induction medication. So
like a clomiphene type one?
Yeah, clomiphene. Yeah. Yeah, and like I knew that I was ovulating fine, so I sort of thought, is this – but I guess what it does do as well is it can release more than one egg, which I guess gives you better chances. So
that's right. Yeah.
And everything's been monitored and blood – you know, like they have everything down to the day sort of thing.
That's
so
right.
We did three back-to-back rounds of that.
Okay.
And nothing.
Yeah. So this is with still trying naturally for the conception, but just trying to boost those eggs.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
Yep.
So that was unsuccessful. Okay. So that was like July, August, September of 2020. Mm-hmm. And then the next month in October, I went into hospital for a tubal, it's called a HSG tubal flush, or they put dye through your fallopian tubes.
Yeah.
So just to check there was nothing blocked. So that,
yes,
I had that done in October and that came back fine.
Good.
Which was good, but also, you know, like I think sometimes you want to know what's going on.
Yeah.
And then basically we sort of talked about it and what, because I guess there's another level up from clomiphene, which would be an IUI, and then IVF. And, you know, you've got to make a decision, like, financially as well. Like, where do you want to spend, a couple of thousand doing something that's got way less chance of working, or do you want to throw it all and go in?
It's almost like gambling, eh? It's like...
Yeah, because you look, and I'm that kind of person that, I look at, like, the odds and I'm like, well, financially it would actually make more sense to move, but it's a huge decision. Like it's a lot of money,
and and there's a big difference between the two treatments as well.
Yeah, and I think I was still what was I 32, so I guess young in terms of the people coming through the door at Fertility Associates. But I still was like, if that's where my blood levels are at now, this is we want this so much that I'm just not willing to wait around another few years to see what might be.
Yep.
If we can,
because it all takes time, eh? Every single cycle you do, it eats into time as well. So that's always a factor in decision making.
So we had a chat about it, and we decided that come New Year, like 2021, we would commence IVF, and obviously we were secretly hoping that maybe we'd get pregnant in that window of time, but we didn't.
So you just IUI completely?
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Just went straight to IVF. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, that's right. And so we went in for the meeting with the nurse to learn how to do all the injections and all of that, and we started in February of 2021, and it was a bit scary doing all the injections, but Ben did them all.
Kidding.
Yeah. He was really great with that. It's so bizarre trying to inject yourself, like your brain just doesn't want to do it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, when I did mine, I thought I wanted my husband to do it. And he did the first one, and then I was like, oh, no, I need to take control of this. I wanted to kind of to know exactly when that needle was going to hit.
I used to listen to music, which was quite helpful.
Nice distraction.
So that was fine. So we, you go in for your scans to check how things are progressing. Mm-hmm. And I went in for my first follicle scan of our first IVF round. And there I was, pretty naive, thinking, oh, maybe this we'll get it. 20 eggs, because I'm looking, obviously, typical me is looking at how many eggs someone of my age should get. And the doctor who's scanning me, it wasn't actually our doctor, he sort of looks at me and he looks at the screen and he said, what's your AMH again? And I tell him, and he's like, this is not making any sense. And he's like, I can remember he said, if you were my patient, I'd probably cancel this cycle. You'd not responded very well to the medication, because they'd had me on the highest medication protocol because of my AMH. So there's no, they can't pump me full of any more drugs than they already were.
Yeah.
And there it was, not my body was not even cooperating. So that was like the wind was just knocked out of my sails completely after that. I just went, we're doing IVF. Like there is nothing more you could do than this. And this is not, my body's not going to work with this. Wow. Like I was devastated.
Yeah. Did you have no no eggs that he could see, or
I had
very
follicles, but I had just they'd grown quite unevenly. So I had one very, very large one and not a lot else. And so pushing forward with the collection when there's only really one egg to collect would not make a lot of sense.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, I just was he called my doctor and decided to add this other drug in, Menopur, I think it's called, and that was hopefully going to save the cycle, the day. And so two more nights or three more nights of this other drug and come back and see. And thankfully, whatever that drug was worked, because the next scan they said, we're probably looking at 5 to 6 eggs, which is, we can go ahead with that number. That's still quite a low number, but we don't have to cancel the whole thing. So, So we went in for collection and we got 6 eggs. Yeah, so I suppose I was a little bit hoping for more than that. Yeah. But once it's quality, not quantity, which I know now. And which,
That's right.
Which I would also always try and remind anyone going through IVF that it really is, really does trump the quantity.
That's right. Yeah. And also, given your egg reserve situation, 6 sounds, I know more is better, but 6 sounds pretty good. I only got 6 on my first cycle as well.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
That old half dozen. Yeah, by day 5, so I think 5 of them fertilized. I can't quite remember how it all went, but by day 5, when they went back to check, we had 2 embryos. So one was a 4AB, which is like pretty much just one under the highest kind of grading. Mm-hmm. And one was a 4BC, which is considered a low grade embryo. So the low grade embryo was frozen immediately and we did a fresh transfer of the best embryo.
Yeah.
So basically 5 days after the egg collection, we'd gone in and put it back. Yeah. Then it's the dreaded 2-week wait, 10-day wait for the bloods. And I tested at home that morning, actually, and knew that we were pregnant. And we were so excited. Yeah. So we were pregnant. Yeah. And the nurse rang me and she's like, do you already know? Because she could kind of tell that I already knew. Yeah. And I was like, And she gave me my beta number, and which I'd never had a beta number before, but I was like, that's over 100. That sounds great. Pregnant. Yeah. And she said, you just need to go on for another blood test in 2 days' time. And we expect the levels to rise, things like that. So I got the call for my second blood test and she said it's not risen like we'd hoped it would. Okay. The number is whatever the number was. And, it's still risen, but we need you to do a third blood test. So that was really freaky because I was like, I'd never had betas before with my other 2 pregnancies, so I didn't really know.
Yeah, and so for anyone listening who doesn't understand this, it's a number that represents cell growth. It's like the multiplication of the cells, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the number's meant to double every 24 or 48
hours.
Every
48
hours,
I think. Yeah.
And it's showing that the pregnancy's progressing, right? Am I correct?
Yeah. Just kind of exponentially grows in those first few weeks.
Yeah. And so they check it to just make sure the pregnancy is continuing as they hope. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So your numbers weren't rising as expected.
Yeah. But the third blood test, I think, got us out of the woods there. So we were set to go. And so we went in for our first scan at the clinic. Yeah. At around, I think it was around 7 or 8 weeks, maybe just over 7 and 7.5, something like that. Mm-hmm. And we saw a heartbeat. So, so we were like, oh, good. But my morning sickness had kicked in with a vengeance again at that 6-week mark. And this time, because of the ondansetron that I'd taken in the last pregnancy, I decided to try metoclopramide, which is it's actually more a first line what's offered to women normally. and it would have hopefully less effect on like side effects on my guts and stuff, which the other one on ondansetron did. So I started taking that at around the 7 week mark, and basically I can remember I think my mum had come up with I think she might have been staying with us, and we went out to swimming with Beck, and I was just feeling really sick, and I'd just started taking that drug perhaps that day before or something, and I started feeling really like anxious and like sweaty palms, heart racing, and I think I thought it was because I was getting so anxious about how sick I was going to be again, you know? So hoping that this time there'd be a baby and I wouldn't have to go through being, because that was so hard last time, being so sick for nothing, you know? That's how it felt. And I went back home that afternoon after swimming, and yeah, it just got worse and worse and worse. And wasn't till maybe that night that, so my mum's a ex-ED nurse, so she's she's medical, and something triggered in her that like maybe something wasn't quite right. And she ended up realizing that I was having quite a severe allergic reaction to that drug.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And oh, that's scary.
It was truly terrifying. So I was like, my jaw was locking up. I felt like my whole throat was like, it wasn't anaphylaxis, but it was something like, it felt similar, I guess.
Yeah.
And I'm pounding heart, just could not sleep, all of that. It was just horrible. So obviously we just stopped me taking that drug immediately. Mm. And yeah, it was just awful. Like that night I couldn't sleep, and I can just remember my husband like holding me just to try and like calm me down. And yeah, it was awful. I just felt so horrible. And weirdly, the intensity of the allergic reaction actually killed some of the morning sickness. So that in itself then caused me to have more anxiety. There was something. It was just, yeah, it was really an awful time. So basically, so yeah, we'd had the first scan, then I had to kind of deal with this, come down from this reaction, which took the best part of a week for me to get back to normal and feel better again.
Yeah.
And we went in for our second scan at the fertility clinic at 9.5 weeks, and the pregnancy had ended.
Anna, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, so that was horrible because both pregnancies I'd seen heartbeats and then not. So that's, and so I was just so distraught about that. I just opted straight away for another DNC.
Yeah.
The morning sickness had creeped back in, and once again we had a delay getting that date for that surgery, so I had to spend almost 4 days, I think, feeling sick. And because at this time I hadn't had any physical symptoms of miscarriage, so it wasn't until the ultrasound that we were told it was not good news. So that was really, really horrible. And so we had one embryo left in the freezer from our first round, that low-grade one that I mentioned.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
But we chose to actually kick off a second round of IVF and do TGTA testing this time, which is where they biopsy the trophectoderm, or the outer part of the embryo, and do testing on it. And I really wanted to do that this time, just to have some more confidence that nothing can obviously promise that you won't have a miscarriage. Nothing's guaranteed, but at least it might give some reassurance.
Yeah. And especially seeing as that first baby you lost, you knew had a genetic condition, right? Yeah. And you don't know what
the next one we didn't know. So you can actually pay, there are companies that will do it for you. Mm-hmm. But so it was really, yeah, I don't know why the gynecologist in our first surgery sent it off and we didn't pay, but it turns out you have to have had 3 miscarriages under the public system for them to start doing that sort of thing.
Gotcha.
I guess we were just lucky that the first time they did it, but the second time it was going to cost us like $1,000. And at that point I was like, what will that information give me? Like, I didn't really need to know. So, because I'd already made my mind up that we wanted to do this testing next. So,
which would help, which would give you answers as you went. Yeah.
So, wow. I didn't really have much of a break between that miscarriage and starting the second round. Mm-hmm. I think I might have gone away with some girlfriends to the South Island at one point, and it was really starting to creep into my mental health a lot. Like, I think I had a bit of like a panic attack the night before going, and thank God I arrived to like 2 of my most dearest friends who were just able to wrap me in love, and had a good breakaway that weekend, and then cracked on with round 2. And so this time we, I guess, learnt from the first round, like what drug protocol might be best for my body. And we were really hopeful we'd get maybe more eggs this time, but we actually got less. We got 5 eggs, and only 3 of those were even mature. So we really, really only got 3 eggs. So that was pretty gutting.
Yeah.
But once again, from 3 eggs, we ended up with 2 embryos.
Wow.
At day five and then day 6.
Yeah.
So that's quite amazing odds, really.
That is, off the 3 for sure.
Yeah. So we chose to biopsy both those. Mm-hmm. This is all extra cost, by the way, on top of what you've already paid. Everything. But we thought it was the best. So we biopsied both embryos, and you've got to wait, like in New Zealand, I think it's like 5 or 6 weeks to get the results.
Right. So in the meantime, they're in the freezer, I'm guessing.
So they take the cells from the trophectoderm. So it's just the biopsied cells that get sent away, and then the embryo just remains frozen.
Yeah,
that's right. So so whatever transfer we would be doing would be a frozen rather than first time it was a fresh. So we got the results back. One was euploid, which means it's got 46 chromosomes, which is normal, which is great. And one was called mosaic, where they didn't know, but it had a lot of red flags, put it that way, and was not. We talked to a genetic counselor, and it was not advised that that was good for any kind of transfer. So we basically had one golden egg. We were pinning our hopes for the next pregnancy. Where were we now? We were in September of 2021. Almost a year, year ago. We had the like COVID lockdown again, which I thought was going to maybe cancel everything, but luckily I think the clinic had learned a lot from the previous year in terms of the distress that was causing women, like cancelling stuff. So luckily they were pushing on with transfers and things like that. There was some stuff they were putting a hold on, but mostly everything was going ahead. You just obviously couldn't bring anyone with you. So we did a transfer of that euploid embryo in September 2021, and it didn't work. I just didn't get pregnant. I tested at home, and I knew that you should be seeing a line of some description forming, you know, by about 6 or 7 days. It didn't work. And so I was sort of rock bottom at this point. Being a 30-something-year-old woman, there was a lot of people around me having babies and moving on and completing their families. And so, you know, and it's one of those things, like the effort does not correlate to the outcome with these things. Like you can try, you can be like, you can do all your research you want. Like I was constantly researching, like what what might be best for our next steps and all that. But, you know, it just doesn't work like that. So basically, I was going to say we had paid up front for 3 rounds. So okay. I knew we had another round that I might be able to drag myself through. But after that, I was like, I don't think I could do this anymore.
I understand that feeling. I definitely know that feeling. So I was just going to ask, so you've got the Mosaic one, which you have decided is not one you're going to use. And then have you still got that lower graded one in the freezer as well?
Correct. Okay. Yeah.
And so what did you do?
Yeah. So I was seeing a therapist and she was talking me through this like idea of like radical acceptance, which is where you have to like wholly accept that, that it might not happen. And then whilst that's super sad and like it takes away the anger and the bitterness, because that's what I was becoming, really angry and really bitter. And so I was going through all of that. And so what we decided was that our doctor had sort of said, like, in order to be able to move on to round three as part of the upfront sort of program that we were doing, we really need you to transfer that lower grade embryo because they'd been a bit generous letting us push on to round two without terms and conditions without like using it, because you're really meant to use up your any frozen embryos you have. And so I was of the opinion that, well, I suppose first of all, I suppose it's good to give that embryo a chance. But I also was so beaten down and pessimistic that I was like, well, it's not going to work anyway. Why don't we just push on, literally do a back-to-back transfer? So it was September that we had the completely failed transfer. I'm going to come off the medication, get a period, go back on the medication and put that in that low-grade embryo in October. And so that's what the doctors said that we could do. Yep, you can do that. That's perfectly fine. So that's what we did. So I go in with very low expectations because I'd been told that the implantation chances were lower with the grading it had and all this sort of thing. So I think at best I was just hoping it would just not work at all. I just did not want to have it work, and I just did not want to have another miscarriage, you know? I think I was like, because I had to go in for the transfer on my own. And I think I remember the nurse was getting me ready and I was crying, just feeling so scared, I think. Yeah. So I didn't test at all that 10 days because I didn't have any pregnancy tests in the house. I think I'd used them all up. And I didn't think it would work. And I was so ambivalent about the whole thing. Like I just was like, oh well. So I went in for my bloods and I remember saying to my husband, I was like, I'm gonna need to drink away my sorrows tonight. We were heading away up north, so once I get this call to tell me it hasn't worked, we'll stop in and get a bottle of wine and have a nice weekend and whatever. And we were driving in the car when the call came, and I put it on speaker and they said, you're pregnant. And so it was actually quite cool that Ben got to hear that at the exact same time that I did. But obviously that elation was quickly replaced with anxiety. And I remember, you know, we got given that first beta number, as you do, and then 2 days later going in for the second and getting the call from the nurse, and I was driving, I think I dropped my son at kindy, and she said the numbers are not where we'd like them to be.
So like,
and my heart just dropped. I pulled over on the side of the road and I was just so terrified, and I was just like, not again, like I just can't do this again. And I remember saying to her, can I come off my medication please? And she said, no, you can't do that. You know, as long as it's going up, it's going up. And I said, because obviously the only thing sustaining the pregnancy, because it was a frozen transfer was the drugs, the estrogen and the progesterone I was taking. So that if I had stopped that, it would have miscarried. And she was like, no, of course you can't. You need to stay on the drugs and we'll do another blood test. So it was just this horrible wait from from Wednesday to Friday, just hoping and praying that the number would be better, and it was. Yeah. So that third beta was a really good number. Right. So that was great. But obviously I'm still full of anxiety. Clockwork at 6 weeks, there comes the morning sickness. Yeah, it's like I knew when it would arrive.
So you had a lot to be anxious about at this point, like.
Oh,
so
yeah,
much.
And being sick in and of itself caused a lot of anxiety for me.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, gosh. So I ended up, so I'm just trying to remember the timeline, but it was even worse, I think, the morning sickness this time, like hyperemesis kind of level stuff. Like yeah. I lost 9 kilos in the first trimester. Yes.
Wow. That's a lot.
I went into a A&E clinic one day for IV fluids and the doctor said to me, you need to start taking some sort of medication because otherwise you're just going to be in here every day having a drip. And I said, because obviously what had happened with the metoclopramide, I was terrified, but I knew ondansetron, whilst it had unpleasant side effects, was okay.
Yeah,
so I agreed to go back on ondansetron, which was the right decision because it meant that I could at least keep something down.
Like
I couldn't drink water, so I was sort of mushing up tiny bits of juice with ice and then spooning it in with a teaspoon. That was the only way that I could keep any kind of fluid down.
When you started taking the medication, did that improve? Was this with the medication on board?
It doesn't take the nausea away, that relentless nausea, which is horrid, but it stops you vomiting quite so violently. Okay. So you don't lose so much fluid. So it does its job in that way, but nothing takes the miserableness away.
Goodness me.
So I was sort of like spooning in icy kind of juicy water every day. And it was like November, so it was getting really
hot.
I don't know if you remember, we had a very hot November last year.
Yeah, we did.
It was like getting really hot, which was meaning I was losing even more fluid. Actually, it was so bad that my mum had to get an exemption from the doctor to come through the border because Auckland was still in lockdown come and live with us.
Right.
Because I actually was so sick I couldn't like take Beck to kindy and make his lunches and stuff.
Oh, my goodness, Anna. Whoa.
Yeah. And then at 7 weeks, I can't remember the timeline perfectly, but at 7 weeks, I definitely remember I had heavy bleeding. So I had never had heavy bleeding in a pregnancy and end well. So this was like, oh my goodness, I'm so, so sick. I feel so pregnant, but I'm like bleeding a lot. So I couldn't understand, went to the emergency department because it was a weekend. So I think I had my first initial scan with the fertility clinic on the Monday, and this was like a Saturday or a Sunday.
Okay.
And the bleeding was getting worse and worse, and I even started like cramping, and I was thinking this is all going to be over. And we went in to ED, and I had to go on my own. And the doctor, the male doctor came in and did like a pelvic scan. And he said to me, you know, it's very early, so I might not be able to see a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But your bloods have come back really high in your hormones, which is great. Okay. And then I remember them putting the ultrasound wand on my tummy, and I saw the heartbeat before he even said it. I was like, I can see a heartbeat. And he's like, yep, that's right. Yep. And I said, what do I do? And he said, I can't. Basically, nobody could tell me whether I was going to miscarry. Nobody could tell me where the bleeding was coming from. There was no obvious hematoma or anything like that. It was just wait and see. You might go on to have, maybe he said, you might go on to have an absolutely normal pregnancy, or you may miscarry. We just don't know. So the best thing you can do is just carry on and go to your clinic appointment on Monday, where they can do a better ultrasound, and that's it really. So Monday we went into the clinic. I brought in all my notes from that hospital visit.
Yeah.
They scanned me and measured the pregnancy, and it was measuring a couple of days behind, but he said it all looked okay, but you are now on strict bed rest, which was easy because I was so damn sick that I wasn't going anywhere anyway.
But your mum was with you.
Yeah, that's right. So I was on strict bed rest until the bleeding subsided. So that took about the best part of a week, and it went away, and thank God it never came back. We carried on, found a midwife. I had really like low blood pressure and felt very faint through that first trimester. Luckily for me, and I know a lot of women with hyperemesis suffer the entire pregnancy, and it is hell. But luckily for me, by sort of that sort of 16 weeks, I can sort of eat again. Still miserable, but, you know, functioning. Okay. Keeping myself hydrated and all of that.
Yeah.
And then our 12-week scan went amazing, which was like incredible to get that far.
Yeah.
And then we had a 20-week scan in which they picked up an abnormality with the umbilical cord. That flipped me because of my the anxiety that I had, but as it eventuated, it was no real issue for us anyway. Okay. It just kind of confirmed my decision to have a C-section birth, because I'd had a C-section with Beck, so I just felt like I needed to have something go to, like, without too many surprises.
Some control. Absolutely.
So the rest of the pregnancy, like, I think I just got more and more confident as the weeks went on, but it was still there, that worry, you know. Nothing's ever the same, I think, when you've had
loss.
And little Andy was born the 29th of June.
Oh, my goodness, Anna, I'm just so happy for you. How amazing that she's here.
I know. it still doesn't feel super real. But
And how's your, your anxiety levels and your kind of emotional well-being now? Like, how are you doing?
Yeah, so much relief, like, from the relentless, like, full-time job that IVF is.
Yeah.
You know, like, it really absolutely is. Like, you kind of have to, because you have to advocate for yourself, and you have to be constantly thinking of what's next and what's the next appointment, and that's just exhausting. There's a lot of relief. Obviously, like, she had a few issues with weight loss in the beginning, which kind of was like, oh, what now? But nothing on the level of what I've been through, you know, and also, like, this is it for us, like, and so just that knowing that I don't have to ever go through that again is really closing that door, honoring it, but closing it, you know.
That's I don't know the words for that, but I know that feeling. Amazing.
I have, like, no regrets, you know, like, sometimes I think, oh, we might have got pregnant naturally if we hadn't have, could have saved all this money or whatever, but I genuinely have no regrets pushing forward the way we did with treatment and all that. Yeah. It was really tough, like, the injections, that's one thing, the emotional side is the hardest for sure, you know.
Absolutely. I wanted to ask you, given, you know, what they found out about your levels, your AMH and FSH, when you were trying to have your second baby, is Beck now considered a bit of a miracle, or do you think your levels have dropped a lot after him, or a bit of a, I don't know, we don't know?
Well, potentially, I guess, like, the biggest factor in your fertility is your age. So even if you have these low hormone levels, if you're young, the egg that you may release each month is likely to be a good one. So I guess we just got lucky with Beck that month, you know, and I was 28. So mostly good eggs at that age, you know. Yeah. So, yeah, so it is the biggest factor is age.
And I just that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
I just want to really celebrate this little baby who is in your arms right now. And I front pack while you do this with me. Do you want to just talk me through like meeting her for the first time? Let's celebrate her a little bit.
Oh, yeah. So we hadn't found out what we were having with her.
Yeah, yeah.
That was really, really, really special. And, yeah, I went in like it was a scheduled C-section, which I'd had before, so I'd knew what I was in for. But yeah, it was really special in the theatre when she got lifted up and Ben, my husband, said, "It's a girl." Mm-hmm. So that was really cool. Aww. And recovering pretty well. What are we now? Week 8. So
yeah.
I even went out and did a little bit of a walk/jog yesterday.
Yeah.
And a little bit sore today in my legs, but not anywhere else. So
great.
It's really nice to, feel good again.
Yeah, and that spring weather feels like it's actually coming, hey? You'll be able to get out a bit more. Yeah, amazing. Okay, so what's something you think you learned about yourself through this, through what you've been through?
Probably that I've got fairly dogged determination and I fight pretty hard for things. probably learned that. And I guess I've got a lot, like I love big and I've got a lot of space to give love to another baby. Like I really felt, you know, like some people don't want any babies and that's so cool. Like as well, like there's no, but like you just got to know what's right for you, you know? Yeah. And I just felt like I had that space in my heart for another child and just really wanted to fight for that, I guess.
Yeah. And you really did. You really, really did. And if you had a piece of advice to give to someone who might be on a track similar to yours, what would that be?
You got to find the people that like really get it, which unfortunately have to go through it usually. And that could be like strangers online. So I actually started an Instagram page somewhere along that timeline and connected with a whole bunch of women, who would put up posts that you could feel like you could have written them yourself, you know? Yeah. And it's so validating and nice to have people that just get it without having to be have it explained and things like that. So probably that. And then like people can surprise you. Like people will, loved ones may say the wrong thing and, but mostly they mean well, but also people can surprise you in positive ways. Like one thing that really sticks out was this couple that we're close friends with who remembered the due date month of our first loss and sent me some sweets. Just blown away that they remembered that. So and I guess the other advice that I thought about was you got to try and like enjoy life for now as well. Like as hard as it is, you have to try and enjoy, find some simple joys in your life now.
Right.
Which is once again so easy to say, but keeping yourself well, exercise, eating well, acupuncture was super helpful.
Okay.
Things like that. Talking to people. Yeah.
Yeah. So even you're talking about when you're in the depths of all this treatment, finding some little things that bring you joy or,
just remembering that you've still got a life to live now, and particularly if you've already got a child, you've got, you know, trying to be present and,
Because it's so easy to be, well, that's what I felt like, just in limbo, like, I actually don't have a life until I have a baby. That's kind of how it feels. Yeah.
So that radical acceptance thing that I said, like from that therapist, it was so tricky trying to work towards that wholly accepting and then feeling super sad but not being bitter. simultaneously holding hope and carrying on with treatment. That is like, where do you even, it's such a hard place to be.
Yeah.
You know, feeling hopeful, but also, yeah, accepting that it might not happen, because the reality is it might not happen. Yeah. You know, IVF is not a guarantee.
No, absolutely not. Thank you. Beautiful pieces of advice. And our final question today for you, Anna, is what does it mean to you to be mama to Beck and Andy?
What does it mean? Just to love them through this life and teach them the world, but also know that they're their own little people, like they're not they're their own little souls and got their own personalities, and they will be who they will be.
that's so true and potentially very different to each other.
I think so.
Thank you so much for sharing. Thank you so much for your openness and honesty and vulnerability. I know that it will help someone who listens to this. So thank you so much, Anna.
Oh, I really hope so. I think she's just waking up. So that's
perfect timing. Okay. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much.
Bye. You're welcome. Bye. Thank you so much, Anna, for sharing your beautiful story. I am so glad you have come out the other side of all that you have been through, and that you have Andy in your arms and Beck running around your house. As always, I hope this podcast brings you hope, healing, and hugs.